you are, wherever you've come from, whomever you love, we welcome you to the Unitarian Universalist Church of Kent. My name is Marian Yeagler. Kathy Kearns and I are the worship leaders for this morning's service, and we're also joined by Hal Walker, our music director. At this time, I would like to introduce Ivan Belisova. He's the program director for COCODA, Companion Community Development Alternatives. And they were the recipients of a special offering a while back. So Ivan, he has a few words he'd like to say.
Good morning, everyone. You may not remember me, but I came about 2 years ago, I believe, and talk about many of the projects that we are working on. I see some familiar faces, some fellow Rotarians. So I thank you for letting me speak briefly to you. And as I was coming in, I saw the topic for the day, generosity. And basically that is why I'm here, to thank you for your generosity. I've been coming to Kent for, I would say, a little bit over 20 years. I didn't have much gray hair like I do now, but I'm as handsome as back then, and modest, of course. So over the years, and also before I continue, I want to thank, and unfortunately they're not here, Ted and Swanee Bonaida. They have been supporting our work in El Salvador for many number of years, and it's a shame I couldn't get to see them on this trip, but I'm sure I'll get a hold of them next time. I am excited. Last time when I came here, COCODA was in a somewhat complicated situation with the financial crash. A lot of small non-for-profits suffered greatly. Our supporters are by no means rich people, and they always have a hard time giving or donating the little bit they have. So it was very hard for us for a few years, but I like to say that like the Phoenix, we're reborn from the ashes. We are expanding. We actually began work in Nicaragua, a country that also speaks a lot to my heart, and I'm sure many of you have visited in the past. So I want to thank you. I know your contributions went for our water projects, our general fund, our education programs. We recently received a donation. I tried to look up the amount today to let you know exactly, but unfortunately the internet wasn't working properly, so I guess I'll owe you that. But in any ways, I want to thank you from the bottom of my heart. The monies that you have given us have allowed us to continue our work, being able to expand to neighboring countries, and continue to provide water and education for countless youth in El Salvador. So thank you so very much, and I will stay after the service if anybody wants to talk a little bit more and have a cup of coffee with me. Thank you so much.
And now Meg Milko has an announcement.
Good morning. As Marian said, my name is Meg Milko, and many of you know me and know for the last several years I've been chairing a couple of important ministries here at this congregation. Number one would be I chair the fundraising efforts here, which includes Pancake Sunday, which is today the flavor's peach. Second, I chair the annual service auction every year, the Thanks for Giving auction that we put on. So it's with very mixed emotions that I have to announce to you, Deb and I are going to be moving in the next month. And we're moving down to Minerva to be with her mom, who's getting a little older and ill. And so I have to give up these important ministries. So I wasn't going to get all emotional. So what I'm asking you today is to look in your heart and look at your schedule and see if you have some time to give to this church. I need someone to help take over the fundraising efforts, which are holiday gift fair, the pancake breakfast every month or so, and Tupperware fundraiser and any other fundraisers you want to bring to the table or that the congregation brings to you. Also, the most important to me is the auction. That one's been near and dear to my heart since I pretty much joined this congregation and started handling the bids at the auction, and now I'm the chairperson. So I'm looking for one or two ambitious people that want to step up and learn what this is about and kind of shadow me this year through the planning process. I'll be staying on to continue that this year, even though I'm relocating. I've already got a lot of it done and underway, so I think we're in good shape. We got a great team that works on the committee that knows what they're doing and will help you every step of the way and support you through those efforts. So if you feel that you've got some time now and now's a good time in your life to step up, please let me know or email the church office and let Mary Beth know, and she'll get in touch with me and I can work with you on how to transition you into these positions. Thank you very much.
True giving is a thoroughly joyous thing to do. We experience happiness when we form the intention to give. In the actual act of giving, and in the recollection of the fact that we have given, generosity is a celebration. When we give something to someone, we feel connected to them, and our commitment to the path of peace and awareness deepens. This morning, as we gather to worship together, I want to acknowledge with gratitude the generosity of the many volunteers who show up on Sunday morning to help make our experience what it is. If you've ever served in, I'm not going to name names, but if you've ever served in any of these capacities, please stand as I announce them. Greeter, usher, worship associate, orchestra, bell choir, nursery helper, religious education, coffee hour snacks, transportation, soundboard, lay worship leader, adult choir, youth choir, preschool helper, coffee hour setup and cleanup, flowers for the chancel. Let's all give these generous congregation members a round of applause.
Our wisdom words this morning come from Rabbi Abraham Tversky. No good deed comes undone. No good deed we have done can be taken away from us. During the early 15th century, the golden era of Jews in Spain, Don Isaac Abravanel was an advisor to the king. Some who were envious of his success tried to impinge him by telling the king that Don Isaac had prospered by embezzling from the royal treasury. Although the king did not believe this, his suspicions were sufficiently aroused for him to ask Don Isaac to provide him with an accurate accounting of all that he owned. Several days later, Don Isaac gave the king a list which amounted to a relatively small sum. "This is hardly a tenth of what I know you own." Don Isaac responded, "When your majesty asked me for this accounting of my possessions, I knew it was because some of my enemies have been maligning me. If they succeed, then your majesty will confiscate everything I have. Thus, these are hardly things I possess because I can lose them in just a moment. I therefore made a calculation of whatever money I had given to charity, because that can never be confiscated from me. And what I have given away is truly the only thing I can say that I own."
In the spirit of prayer, I offer this from Stephen Schick, like a river. Spirit of the flowing river of life, when my heart is light, like the mayfly dancing above your surface, let me rejoice. As I rise and dip through the air currents of my days, your presence gives me courage to fly free. And when the rains of sorrow force me to rest on your banks, help me to accept your soothing ripples, promising that despite its pain, life is good. In the darkest, coldest time, as I lie hardened and nearly frozen, let me hear your undercurrents coursing through my veins, awakening my muscles, renewing my mind, seeping purpose into every part of me. In my discerning moments, grant me wisdom to trust what I discover in your endless current of possibilities. Then let me hear the wisdom that flowed through your Sufi poet, Rumi. When you do things from your soul, you feel a river moving in you, a joy. When action comes from another section, the feeling disappears. Grant me the courage to give back to life all that its flowing river provides.
I'd like to welcome Cameron Mack and my nephew Charles Weissen here for a special harmonica performance.
Again, a story from the rabbi. The following true tale comes out of my own life stories. When I decided to go to medical school, I was married with two children and one on the way. I held a low-paying position as an assistant rabbi, and my father helped support me and my family. The tuition for medical school was formidable, but I was able to manage for a while using donations from my congregation and some loans. But by the middle of my third year, I was in debt up to my ears and unable to go on. I wrote to foundations which gave scholarships to medical students, but I was turned down. What to do? I usually called home during the day to see how my wife was feeling, and one day she said, "What would you do if you had $4,000? "Oh, I'd travel around the world. Can't she see that I'm busy? I said to myself. I have no time for daydreaming, is what I said aloud. This is not a daydream. There is a check for $4,000 on its way to you. Did you forge it? No. Danny Thomas is giving you $4,000. I had no idea who Danny Thomas was and wondered if perhaps my wife's pregnancy was making her a little strange. But after we'd gone back and forth about this check, she read me the following story out of the Chicago Sun-Times. At a meeting with officials from Marquette University, the officials told Danny Thomas about the plight of a young rabbi who was having a difficult time financing his education. Well, how much does the rabbi need? Danny Thomas asked. About $4,000, the Marquette official said. Well, tell your rabbi he's got it. Like it happened all the time, I thought. But sure enough, several days later, I received a call from Danny Thomas, who affirmed that the money was coming in a few days. For the rest of Danny Thomas's life, we were in touch. I have no idea what Danny received spiritually from his generosity to strangers. I do know that I received a medical degree, as well as confirmation of my belief and pride in humankind. One material return that Danny Thomas received came about many years later, and I am forever grateful for having been a part of it. Danny traveled around the country raising money for the hospital he had built that specialized in leukemia, the Shrine of St. Jude. He came to Milwaukee to raise money, and I contacted people on his behalf asking that they attend a fundraising dinner. That evening, I was given the opportunity to make a presentation to Danny Thomas of the pledges we had raised for the charity, which meant so much to him. At this time, I shared with everyone what Danny had done for me, and I was embarrassed by my tearfulness and avoided looking out at the group. But finally, as I presented Danny with a gift, I had to look up. And that's when I found that many of those in the room weeping the same tears of gratitude and admiration for the great, kind man. I also gave him a beautiful volume of the Bible with a silver filigree cover inscribed with this verse from Micah. For what does the Lord God ask of you but to act with kindness, do justice, and walk humbly with your God? Mitzvahs not only bind, but also break through barriers, bringing people together as the brothers they should be. Who would think of a less likely combination, a Lebanese Christian and a Hasidic rabbi? A father rejoices when he sees his children acting kindly to each other. Danny and I certainly took pleasure in what we had done for each other. And since we had done what God asked of us, our pleasure was increased manifold by our awareness that we had made our Father happy as well.
What does it mean to be generous? Here are some definitions I found for generosity from dictionary.com. Readiness or liberality in giving. Freedom from meanness or smallness of mind or character, a generous act, largeness or fullness, amplitude. And from Merriam-Webster, the quality of being kind, understanding, and not selfish, the quality of being generous, especially willingness to give money and other valuable things to others. The essence of this seems to be a willingness to give to others out of a feeling of kindness. This sounds pretty easy, so what might sometimes hold us back? I believe one thing that constrains us is our feelings about abundance and scarcity, what we have and what we think we need to have to be generous. I first began pondering these questions when I read wisdom from Mennonite missionaries who had contributed stories to a book called Living More with Less. The missionaries had all lived in developing nations which influenced how they thought about wealth and giving. Here are a couple of their stories that stuck with me, even though I read the book many years ago. Herta Jansen, Asking and Giving. While living in Calcutta, I was daily aware of the disparity between rich and poor. One day, a mother came to our apartment to tell me that her daughter would be working in the mountains during the winter and needed a pair of slacks. "Can she have a pair of yours?" she asked. I knew I could not explain. I only had two pairs, a bare minimum in North America. She would think that absurd. Were the Bible passages to be taken literally? After deciding which pair of slacks to give, I added a matching top as well. I'm embarrassed to admit now that I never missed that outfit. The remaining pair of slacks saw me through two winters. And from Edgar Stoats, Creative Deprivation. I had just returned from an overseas trip. Briefing me on developments during my absence, Gladys concluded with a reminder of Christine's upcoming birthday. Unmistakably, our youngest child wanted a new bicycle. Still preoccupied with the poverty I had seen, I asked, "What about the bikes rusting in the garage? For us to buy another bike would be a sin." "I know what you mean," Gladys responded, "but each of the other children got a new bike. She has her heart set on it." It isn't right to ask an 8-year-old girl to bear the responsibility for world poverty. How could I deny her what she wanted when I was gone so often? I decided to talk to her and see if she could enter into a decision with us. Choosing the occasion and my words carefully, I explained that we knew she needed a different bike, that the other children had each owned a new one, and that on that basis of equality, she could demand one too. Then I told her the reasons why we didn't want to buy another new bicycle just now. I made a suggestion. "Let's get a can of paint and refinish Susan's old 26-incher. We can buy some decals and make it look good. And then let's send a check for $75 to our mission board." I could tell immediately this was a winner. We did the work together, sanding, painting, adjusting, and straightening the old wheel. We called it her Recycle Bicycle. When we wrote out the check, Christine prepared the cover letter asking that the money be used to buy food for the hungry, not cars or other things. She never regretted it. Every time she wrote it, she seemed to have a private inner satisfaction. Today, she cherishes the memory of a beautiful experience which helped teach her self-denial and concern for others. These stories move me as they exemplify an ideal to aspire to, living and spending money and using resources in alignment with our values, even when it comes at a cost to us. They remind us of the inner wealth we can experience when we are generous with others and help us appreciate that how we view our situation from a perspective of resources or scarcity is not just determined by how much money we have on hand, but also by how we frame the situation. In fact, as noted by Rebecca Garden, even though wealthier individuals give away more money, she says, quote, "Arguably, lower income earners are the more altruistic group as they tend to give away a greater share of their income. People earning less than $25,000 contribute an average of 4.2% of their household income to charitable groups, while those making $100,000 or more shell out an average of 2.7% of earnings." I invite you to reflect on questions inspired by these readings. How do you feel when you are generous? How do you balance generosity with other values? What do you have in terms of both time and money that you could share with others?
Well, as luck would have it, right as I volunteered to do a reflection for this service, I was having my very own, bigger than life, personal experience on generosity. I'd been thinking quite a lot about what sort of gift to give in our upcoming capital campaign. And I kind of surprised myself, and I also scared myself a little bit with the amount that I've decided to give. Well, it may not be huge to some. It will be, quite honestly, the largest charitable gift I've ever given and will probably ever give. Was I losing it? Am I the UU equivalent of that little old lady who gives her life savings to that nice preacher man on TV? So I started thinking about why I was doing this, why I felt so strongly that this is the right thing for me to do, and it kind of led me to one of those aha moments. I started thinking about how happy I was back in 2001 when I walked in with my daughter Kelly one Sunday morning in the spring, and I felt at home immediately. I felt lucky to have found a place like the UU Church of Kent. Well, thinking about that got me to thinking about how little luck had to do with it and that how much generosity did. This community did not just magically appear. It's the result of 150 years of giving. All the people that I will never know, generations of people that were kind and generous in their giving, that enabled this church to remain open in Kent, Ohio, so that it would be here when I needed it. I'm thankful for the generosity of the Kent family, who donated the land for this church, and the church's founders, the Haymakers, the Parsons, the Boozingers, the Strattons, the Foots, the Kelsos, and the Olens. They called themselves gentle optimists. They made sure that the church they envisioned became a reality in brick and mortar. I'm thankful for the multitude of people who kept the doors open through two world wars and a Great Depression. I'm thankful for the people who kept the church going through the lean years of the 70s and the 80s. I am the beneficiary of much generosity. A long, unbroken line of Unitarians and Universalists, each generation making sure that there's a place for the next. And as I get ready to give, it makes me feel that I'm stepping in some well-worn footsteps. I'm following a good path. I'm taking my turn to play my part to make sure that our Unitarian Universalist legacy lives on. To tell you the truth, it makes me feel like a bona fide grown-up. So I think now that I truly have an understanding of what the word legacy giving truly means, my generosity today will benefit people that I don't know, people just like me. Granted, they may be arriving here in solar-powered hovercrafts, but they'll be searching for a spiritual home just like I was in 2001, and our founders were back in the 1860s. Then I really went off, and I started thinking about someone 100 years from now, sitting at a desk, thinking about how much they could afford to give to the church. And I think perhaps that they'll start wondering about all of the generous people who gave before them, me being among them. People they'll never know, but who they can feel all around them when they step into the church. And that feels pretty good to me. I found a nice quote from a very unlikely source, Calvin Coolidge, who actually summed it up pretty nicely. He said, "No person was ever honored for what he received. Honor is the reward for what he gave."
A reflection on generosity of spirit. Listening to NPR the other day, as I often do, I heard an interview with David Sedaris talking about his partner, Hugh, reputedly a very good cook. What David shared was that if Hugh went to friends for dinner and the dinner was not exactly great, Hugh would never disparage the dinner or the cook. David said of Hugh, "People who are confident in their ability can be generous in that way." This got me to thinking about generosity of spirit, a phrase that we're hearing more often these days. Reflecting, reading, and discussing with friends about generosity of spirit carried me to works of several thinkers with many ideas of what this means and how to reach toward becoming generous of spirit. Nevertheless, a number of recurring themes helped me to gain insight. Generosity lets go of expectations. giving without the need for our offering to be received in a certain way, or the expectation of receiving in the same way we give. Generosity of spirit assumes positive intent, a trust that people want to behave selflessly, and a trust that others will use their time and resources appropriately. We are predisposed to give. Count on people to be generous. Generosity is good for your health and happiness. The Buddhist tradition teaches that generosity can bring so much joy and self-respect. Simple acts of generosity give us the power to loosen our feeling of attachment to habits, conditioned views, things, and to open ourselves to greater spaciousness of mind and the freedom to revalue. Generosity changes you. True generosity of spirit comes out of a deep understanding of the oneness of all of us. When we think of other people as other, distrust causes us to hold tighter to our habitual thoughts, the thoughts that inform who we are and how we behave. You may have heard Sasha Dichter at a TED Talk speaking about his generosity experiment, in which he decided for 1 month to say yes to anyone and everyone who asked. Quoting here from Sasha Dichter, "It was about me. I wanted to stop saying no. To break the habit of hiding behind what was smart and keeping me from doing what was right. The no's add up, and pretty soon no becomes who you are." End quote. Nipun Mehta teaches, when you give, there's an inner transformation that creates a stillness in your mind, and that stillness is an unbelievable asset, end quote. I believe that this stillness is, at least in part, that this stillness gives rise to confidence in our own generous capacity. Generosity provides us the tool to explore and reveal our sense of inner abundance. Generosity is a leadership quality. Erica Anderson wrote in a blog at Forbes, blog post at Forbes.com, "Being truly generous as a leader arises from generosity of spirit, and it requires self-confidence. You have to feel secure enough about your own ability to take care of yourself and about your own judgment of people to know that you can share your resources and assume positive intent and not be left with nothing. You have to be able to trust that if you give away power, information, credit, and faith to those who work for you and with you, that you will get it back tenfold in commitment, joy, good work, and growth. Generosity is the lifeblood of connectedness. Connectedness to ourselves, to each other, and to all living things. When you give, you create relationships. When someone supports you, acknowledges you, offers you their belief and faith, it makes you want to reciprocate in kind. In community, generosity has the capacity to engender a culture of paying it forward, to hold ourselves in a circle over generations in community. Generosity is generative. It's contagious, and it's joyous. Generosity is not primarily about money, and true generosity almost always elicits a generous response. It fuels further love and generosity. You can't pay back for small and sometimes anonymous kindnesses, but you can pay forward, tying into a chain of generosity. And finally, generosity is a practice. It's not the stuff that we give. It's the love with which we give it that makes us generous. Generosity may be material. It may be fully listening, giving full attention, presence, thanking, smiling, creating, solving, giving. Meta coined a term, giftivism, which he defined as the practice of radically generous acts that change the world. He gives the example of a group of young people giving free car washes. When asked what the fundraiser was for, the kids replied, "No fundraiser, we're just practicing being generous." Surprised, the car drivers reacted with joy and gratitude for this simple act of pure generosity and left with the desire to pay forward. For myself, I cannot wholly separate generosity from gratitude. When I feel thankful for my life, I want to give. And I'll leave you with the words of the Sufi poet Rumi. Wear gratitude like a cloak, and it will feed every corner of your life.
I'd like to dedicate my reflection to Christy Anderson, who is a gifted listener. I love trees. I've always loved trees. I love them when they're lush and they're full, but I love them in the winter when they're bare because I feel like they've shared their innermost reality with me. I see their skeletons. And because I love trees, I tend to look at them a lot wherever I am. And because I look at them a lot along the years, I've had little incidents that have happened that have become for me this little collection of tree stories that I have. So I'm going to share with you my most recent tree story. I was in New York about a month ago, and I was with one of my dearest friends, Eva, whom I don't get to see very often. She lives in the East Village, and we were in Tompkins Square Park. And it was a beautiful, sunny day, unusual this summer. And we were sitting in a central area of the park that's paved over with decorative concrete. And in the middle of this area is a huge, huge tree. The trunk is, I don't know how much, around. So we're sitting on a bench together, enjoying each other's company, and we saw a small group of people, of four, come up into the area right around the tree. And they were wearing tunics, long garments. There were three men and one woman. And one of the men was wearing the white pajama-looking garment that my friend told me in India is called the dhoti. And they circled the tree. And so we were watching. They knelt down on the ground, and they touched their foreheads to the ground as they were all facing the tree. And I was so, because I'm a tree lover, I'm like, oh my gosh, they're worshiping in the tree. This is like my ultimate dream. And then they stood up, and they put their hands, all of them, on the trunk of the tree, and they just put their foreheads against the tree. This was so beautiful to me. And then the man who was wearing the white garment, the others sat down, and he circled the perimeter of this large circular area about 10 times. And it seemed to me, I'm surmising, but it seemed to me that he was purifying the space. And then the group of them got instruments, and they sat down at the edge of the circle, sitar and some other instruments, and began to play. So this would be enough of a story, but there's more to it. Two young girls were sitting next to us. One of them was Asian, and she turned to us, and she started engaging us in conversation. And she said, my name is Amy, I'm 16, and I'm here with my church group. We're on kind of a mission to the city. That kind of, for me, one of my weaknesses, I try not to, is how I view proselytizing, and that's just a personal whatever. But I was also a teacher for about 35 years, so the other part of me is Socratic method, blah, blah, blah. And it was a beautiful day, and I was happy, so it was a good, benevolent feeling. So they started talking to us, and the girl who was with Amy was the pastor's daughter of this church. So they began by asking Eva and I if we went to church, and Eva said she did not, but I said that I did, and I shared the name of the church, and they had no idea what Unitarian Universalism was. So they kept asking questions, what that meant, what we believed, did we believe we would go to heaven or hell, you know, all the kinds of things that you would expect might be questions. And they were very dear. They were so earnest and so sincere and so open. And so honestly, we talked with them about 45 minutes, and it was beautiful. It began to get to the point where Eva was a little disturbed, and that's when we kind of ended the conversation, because we asked the girls if they had, it was a few days after the Supreme Court wedding decision, marriage decision, and we asked them if they knew about that, and they said yes, so we asked them what they thought about it. And the pastor's daughter, who again was a lovely young girl, said, oh, I have so many gay friends, and I really love them, and I want to help them, and it's such a shame that they're damaged. And Eva and I both kind of reacted physically, if not whatever, and said, you know, we don't believe that. You know, we really don't believe that. That's difficult to hear. And I realized for myself that had this been a 45-year-old adult, my reaction would have been more anger. Even though I believe everyone has a right to their opinion, whatever it is, I would have still been really horrified by this, but because I was a teacher of high school students and young college students for many years, and I was in that mode, it didn't hit me that way. I felt like my spirit stretched a little that day because I was open to the discussion. And, you know, so basically we kind of ended the conversation and went on our way. And I had this story and I wanted to tell it. And I said to Marion, I've got this story. I don't know how it fits in the service and generosity. So I just struggle with this. So finally, it started to all become clear to me. Why I feel this is appropriate for service on generosity is I realized the generosity of these three really disparate groups of people, myself and Eva, these young girls, and the tree worshipers, sharing in a public space among strangers their deepest feelings, their innermost feelings, being willing and comfortable to share them, and then on the other hand, being willing, maybe not always comfortable, but willing to listen and to think about that and to think about what all of this means, what all of our stories mean when you put them all together. And in the last few days, this has just become even more clear to me, specifically, as I was saying, thinking about how am I going to describe the moral of the story, I recalled. This was quite a while ago, so she may not even know what I'm referring to, but many, many months ago, Elaine Bowen was part of a worship service, and she shared some heart-wrenching details about her personal life to help us learn. And I'm a crier, and everybody since know that, so if I tear up, just ignore it. But I fell in love with Elaine Bowen that day. I've never said this to her. But I fell in love with Elaine Bowen that day because she was willing to share that. And then I was reminded a few nights ago, my dear friend Kathy Slater, I was really, really upset about something. It's a situation that's been going on. And I was so angry and torn up, and I called her and I ranted on the phone for an hour at her. I could hear my voice was high and loud and abrasive, and I could feel that. And I said, I'm so sorry you had to listen to this for me for an hour. I'm really sorry. You've got your life and dinner's burning, and Joel is saying, what the hell are you doing? And she said, don't worry, you'll listen to me. So that's the moral of the story. For me, generosity is sharing our stories, it's listening our stories, and to summarize it, it's being present for each other. That's the height of generosity to me. So thank you to all my generous, generous people in this church who listen to me and who share with me and in my life, and go hug a tree.
By Victoria Weinstein, the purpose of the church is to encourage all who gather there to grow more generous in spirit and in action. This is the great end of all the world's faith traditions, to bring the human being closer to the divine by acts of creation and compassion. We now take an offering that allows us to exercise that all-important generosity of spirit, an offering that will support this self-supporting church and its many ministries. If you're a guest, we invite you to take a candle from the basket as our gift to you. The offering will now be gratefully received.